to the Devils in the Details radio show live on SkidRowStudios.com. Here's your host, Juan Russell.
Because the land of love and freedom is just a baby's breath away. And if we hold hands together, we can bring back the USA, the USA.
All right, right. Welcome to the... Pardon me. Welcome back to the Devils in the Details radio show. Of course, you're listening live here on SkidRowStudios.com. Sorry, I had to adjust my headphones there. Another beautiful Friday here in the humid and humble downtown Los Angeles. That's where we are, and that's where we broadcast from. Of course, you know that. And of course, thank you for joining me again here today. I couldn't do this show without you, and I appreciate you being here, of course. And download the shows, check out the old shows you haven't listened to. If there's any you've missed, please go back and download those. They're all there for you. Now, you can always call into the show at 1-800-893-9562. That's 1-800-893-9562. I always love to hear your thoughts, thoughts you have regarding the topics and the information we discuss. If you want to possibly shoot me any future show requests or topic requests, certainly I would like to, cover the information that you would like to hear. So send those requests along. I would like to hear those. Now, on the Devils in the Details, of course, our goal is to empower you with the investigations and facts that you aren't privy to on your local news or radio stations. Now, you all know that, but the internet, needless to say, opened up the world of an independent investigation to any and all with an open mind and quest to understand. They have this quest to understand what seems to be happening in their world. They want to know what's going on. So today, we take a visionary look at what I'm calling the formation, and this is my personal idea, and I'm going to express that with you today. We're going to take it a little slow today, but what I'm calling this is the potential formation of the new American Truth Congress. Okay, so let's get it started. Here we go.
What's your name, bruh? Does it change much? Man like me got an alias for each day. Trust, so when you're known round the way enough, you might find yourself with many different names for the same
month. I've been known by many names. I've been Bruiser, Losing King, been Luke, Loser, Super Ginge, been Hoover, referred to as Who's the Chimp, Mr. Clever, but never Mr. Choose to Win. Been, oh my God, your hair's bright. Older Brer with a rare height. Used to be known as the Machine. Mostly clean, now I'm known for my flair, right? Now my family call me Luke, but my fans call me Emerge. My nan says that I'm cute, but that man them call me dirty. Flirty since 13, the manimal. No man or animal can...
All right, thank you. That is the third rail out of the UK. Francis Hamilton and the Boys. Good job. Very good work there. I do enjoy that, so keep it up. Today we are discussing 10 very important people, and I hope to get through all 10, of course, but there are 10 very important people to the freedoms of our continuing world and all of our individual freedoms that we, cherish for, so to this point, the point is to inform you that there is of this show and of trying to define what a new truth Congress is, that whole idea. It is to inform you that I'm letting you know that there is a dissension and a separation within the truth movement. And that really disturbs me. Some people within the movement call, it defunct, splintered. Many of the groups have become intolerant of the other group's investigations and their work, and it's all becoming quite, hard to follow on who to believe, who not to believe, and what I would like to do, or my idea, is a unification of the truth movement. What I would like to do is bring these groups together, at least in a speaking manner or in a collective manner to, potentially force a new independent investigation into 9/11. Now, that wouldn't be the only issue that a new truth Congress would deal with, but that would be the first, of course. But it would also function to demand truth and transparency on any issue that defines and protects the freedom of safety in all human beings. So I stress the names and the people I'm talking about, they're in no specific order, but I feel the time has come for a unification in the truth movement, a unification, of course, that we are going to call today the New American Truth Congress. So I got some drum rolls, crazy little sound effects, and I don't know if these are going to work. We might have to bail out, but here we go. Let's start. Number one. Oh, it's not very good. Okay, but it is Mr. Dylan Avery. Now, I know a lot of this is these people you should know. If you do know, congratulations. You know, study their work. All of these people are very important. But if you don't, the first person on my list is Dylan Avery. Now, he is a filmmaker and creator of the Loose Change film series. He is from Oneonta, New York, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. After discovering Paul Thompson's terror timeline, which we all know is amazing, in mid-2002, Avery began writing a screenplay for a thriller in which a group of friends discovers a government cover-up of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. So after realizing that a full-budget feature was not feasible for an 18-year-old director, he decided instead to make a documentary. So this gave rise to the Loose Change series. Okay, so thank you very much. So, you know, we have a caller on the line. You know, I believe we have a guest. Hello, caller, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, I would like to introduce our guest today. This is a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Wiss, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Hello?
Yes.
You can't hear me? Otherwise known as Alien Scientist. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey.
Sorry, I know you guys started a little while ago. I got mixed up because of the time zones. But.
Hey, no worries. We're doing a show about potential people who will change the future, and you certainly fit well within that. So let me just briefly introduce who you were speaking to. Sorry for my confusion there. He is... this is one of the investigators that I respect and I often quote here on the show. He is a physicist, a researcher, and media producer, Mr. Jeremy Riss, or better known to us on this show as Alien Scientist. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, most people will be familiar with my work under the name Alien Scientist, although you've probably heard my voice on tons of truth videos across the internet and stuff. Made quite a good number of them, and they're copied widely across YouTube and other independent, you know, video media channels and stuff like that.
Absolutely, and we use a lot of your work on the show. But Jeremy, tell us how you got started in truth, the independent investigative world. What's your background, you know, and what's your kind of your specialties of studies?
Well, on the day of 9/11, I was a freshman in college. I was in a college physics classroom when it all happened, and I remember watching it on the TV screen with all my physics professors and all the other physics majors, and kind of watched the towers go down, and I knew that day that they had been blown up with explosives, but I never really thought about it again because I never heard anything more about the explosives or the bombs and the buildings from the media, and then I just heard that the planes had taken them down, and I never really thought about it at all or had any reason to look into it further, so I just kind of faded out of my memory and consciousness after that day went by, and sort of the information flooded in from what we were getting from the mainstream media sources, and I kind of went along with the whole, this was Osama bin Laden and we need to, you know, go over there and fight for our country and the freedom kind of thing that it took everyone else for. And I didn't realize it until probably 2005. I remember my brother had gotten this book and he was like basically just pushing me to read it, and it was Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper.
Right.
And I don't know, I disagree with a lot of the things in that book now, and I've done my own research on a lot of those topics, and I definitely think that, you know, it's a beginner's book, but it definitely was the thing that got me started and got me interested, because he told me to open to a random page and start reading, just, and if I didn't like it, just put it down, just read one page, and if I didn't like it, then don't ever read it again. And I had opened to this page about a crash site that this investigator working for some agency had gone to, this UFO crash site, something had crashed out in Pennsylvania, and he had been hired to pick up the pieces, and he was writing about, like, how the operation took place, you know, how the government kept it a secret, what they told people that the workers would tell people that, you know, they were doing there when they were flown in, the cover stories. And right. It sounded legit, you know. It was just wow. Like, wow, this is like, this could really happen, you know. And I was like, you know, this kind of, if this is true, you know, this is kind of outrageous. So I started looking into like Roswell and a lot of other kind of conspiracy stuff. And I'm not really a big fan of the UFO issue, but I do look at cases like Roswell and think about, you know, what would happen if we were to have contact like that, or a crash alien spaceship or something like that. What if that actually were to happen? You know, what kind of would the government do, and what would their action plan sort of be? And the whole MJ-12 documents that right. A lot of people are alleging came about as a result of, you know, this sort of contact. And those type of documents are the exact type of thing I believe that would happen with the government if that sort of thing did happen, and they seem very convincing and legitimate, even though no one's been able to confirm them 100%, because the government won't just come out and say that, yeah, these are real, you know, this is a reality. But there have been Freedom of Information Acts that have, Stanton Friedman and a number of researchers have done, that have confirmed a lot of those things, and solidified, you know, my belief that, you know, that there is something more that the government knows and is not telling us. And I don't think they would ever tell us. Anyways, the 9/11 thing, I got into that because I started watching some documentaries that a friend had given me. I watched, I think, Loose Change and Terror right. Storm and Martial Law 9/11 and a couple other films. And then I started, you know, doing my own independent research, really into like the whole thermite stuff and the arguments going back and forth about that, and a lot of the debunking that was coming out right around that time, 2005, 2006, when Stephen Jones had first came out with the iron microspheres that he had found in the dust and said that, you know, these are produced by thermite, and he had, you know, made that hypothesis paper that was published back then. And I was up on a lot of the forums and patrolling a lot of the YouTube videos and stuff dealing with this subject, and got kind of involved in a lot of the debates on both sides, and got some videos made with my friend Jonathan Cole, who's an engineer. Jonathan Cole, runs the Physics and Reason YouTube channel. If you search 9/11 experiments on YouTube, you find a bunch of videos that I sort of helped him out with the concepts for a lot of those, gave him some ideas. I said, you know, hey, these debunkers are arguing this. We ought to, you know, they were saying, one of the things was, Popular Mechanics, I think National Geographic, BBC, and Mythbusters were all saying that it was impossible to cut vertical steel columns using thermite. And I said, you know, John, you're an engineer, you ought to be able to do this. I know I could do it, but I don't have the, you know, the setup, you know, or the resources to really carry these things out. So I contacted him. He actually did the experiments in his backyard and proved, yeah, it can be done. And we totally debunked them, and they look like idiots anytime they air that on TV or make that claim as part of their, you know, reasons for debunking these 9/11 conspiracy theories. And another one of the things was the sulfide eutectic formation on the steel from World Trade Center 7 that was in Appendix C of the FEMA report. And they had claimed that sulfidation came from the sulfur from drywall that was from gypsum from drywall, gypsum that was naturally occurred in the building. And so we took some of that materials and some steel and put it in the fire and heated it for a couple of days, you know, threw like big logs on it and heated up super hot, like, right. You know, yellow, red, yellow hot, had it on video and everything, and showed that, you know, wow. It didn't cause any sort of sulfidation of the steel or these eutectic formations. They did not occur naturally in that scenario.
Wow.
And, so we these experiments, and we're able to debunk a lot of these claims that are being made by, you know, mainstream media and stuff. And it felt kind of cool to get engaged in that and to sort of shut down these disinfo operations that are being, you know, aired as truth through the mainstream media. They're saying, no, listen, don't look into this 9/11 conspiracy stuff. It's all hype. None of these theories check out. But, you know, right. You look at the hardcore science, and what we're doing is experiments, and that's the heart of science, the scientific method, and we're proving them wrong.
Absolutely, man. And your work is exceptional. And how you came to my attention was after I watched your YouTube presentation on the potential financial motive behind 9/11. And it just blows me away, mm-hmm. man, how you've connected it all and kind of put it all together. Now, how did you go about connecting all of those things into such a comprehensive understanding of what the, you know, potentially that motive, I think you hit it right on the head. How did you come to that one?
Yeah. It's not really, you know, I can't take credit for all that work. I read a lot of books on 9/11. I do a lot of research, and I read a lot of other people's research. And mm-hmm. I really think that most of the research is not really my own. I'm not really a good researcher. I'm just good at finding good information and putting it into a video and putting it into a coherent form. Cause a lot of that stuff is really boring and tedious. I mean, it's been posted on the internet for years, but it's so boring that nobody's going to read through all that stuff about the Silverstream software and how they have that software company they could have infected all the computers in the entire World Trade Center with and transferred, you know, thousands of dollars around while the attacks were taking place. They could have been switching money around in all those computers and how, like, it caused such a crisis in the financial markets that it would all been, could have easily been covered up afterwards and everything. I didn't do a lot of that research. That came from E.P. Heidner, I think, was the original one. And a lot of that was actually, I found out about that reading Mark Gaffney's book called Black 9/11. And he goes into a lot of the put option stuff. And I didn't even put any of the stuff about the put options. There was an entire chapter on that was excellent. I was actually maybe considering even taking the whole chapter and reading it verbatim and making a video out of the chapter, using it as a script with Mark Gaffney's permission. But just because it was so comprehensive and well done, but I definitely think the put options was a missing piece of that whole puzzle and a huge piece of the financial picture from that video. But I've also a lot of the stuff came from Michael Rupert and you know, his original book way back in, I think, 2002, Crossing the Rubicon.
Excellent.
That was one of the the first books. It was a comprehensive investigation from a guy that came from, you know, a history as a detective, and he was all over, you know, the CIA operation since the 90s when he became involved with it as an LAPD narcotics detective, finding out about, you know, Norwin Meneses and the CIA Contra cocaine ring that was running through Los Angeles at the time.
Right. Freeway Ricky, right? Running all the drugs.
Freeway Ricky Ross. Yeah,
yeah.
Freeway Ricky Ross.
Crazy.
His suppliers were
crazy stuff. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Hey, the whole story, you've read it. I'm sure you know about it. Well,
oh, absolutely. Now, let me ask you a question. You've done a lot of investigation on 9/11, and a lot of this information, these questions I've pulled directly from your, you know, your website with a lot of, you know, the information you provide. But I have a question for you on 9/11, because I attempt to investigate it myself, but in a very anemic fashion. I'm certainly not as talented as you are in finding the information and putting it all together. But who is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this name correctly, Dov Zakheim? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
The Pentagon comptroller. His name doesn't really come up, or I haven't really seen his name come up in a lot of the investigation work. Well, who is he, and how does he kind of tie in?
It's interesting. One of the things I found, when I searched his name before I found this video, is I think it was a clip taken out of a documentary called 9/11 Missing Links. And it basically said the word Jew and rabbi, like every other word throughout the whole thing. And I kind of took the interpretation that they're trying to, you know, make a huge focus in on this Zionist connection. And I think a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people do that. And I don't deny that there was Zionist elements involved in the 9/11 attacks, certainly with some of the people that I've named, like Dov Zakheim. But another thing interesting about Dov Zakheim personally is he ran a company called Systems Planning Corporation, and that was also tied to at a subsidiary called Tridata Corporation, which actually was hired to investigate the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. So they would have had full access to, like, the blueprints of the buildings, all kinds of security information and stuff on the World Trade Centers from back in 1993. And they had actually hired some new security firms to upgrade all the security systems in the World Trade Center. One of those security firms that they hired was, of course, Stratasec Securicom, that Marvin Bush was on the board of directors for that company at the time. A lot of people have pointed out that connection to the Bush administration with them.
Right.
These guys are Bush insiders. They're Zionists. They're also neocons. He was a signing member of the P Project for the New American Century, PNAC.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard of that.
Sure.
Bob Zachheim. And he was actually the author of that line about the catastrophic and catalyzing event that he was pointed to.
Got it.
So it's interesting that, you know, he would be so close to all the financial stuff in the Pentagon, the chief financial accounting officer on 9/11, and also have all these ties to PNAC. He's definitely a suspicious character on the list. And it's definitely an under-talked about and under-investigated individual and piece of the whole 9/11 puzzle because, and I, as I explained, nothing's ever really simple. And when you have an operation like this, which involves so much at stake globally, you're going to have, you know, these types of people involved. And they're going to have international relations like Bob Zachheim does and some of these other guys. But it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people focus in on that Zionist connection, and I've tended to shied away from that because, for example, in that video, it doesn't say just Zionist, it says Jew, and that's very, you know, anti-Semitic. And I've seen a lot of disinformation out there that has tried to associate the 9/11 Truth Movement as a hate group. They've tried to identify us as a hate group.
Right.
And identify us with political hate speech so that we can be labeled as a hate group. And there's been definitely a deliberate effort, and you can see it out there everywhere, to not only do that, but also I think that in that sort of a sense of the word, it actually hides these people more than exposes them, because it gives you a reason to say, oh, well, you're just blaming these people because you're anti-Semitic or that you hate their ideology. You know, you're not blaming them. You know, I'd rather focus on the evidence of what implicates them as being guilty or being involved in all this. And there's certainly a lot more people that, you know, like Dick Cheney, for example. You can't you can't exactly call him, you know, a Jew or a Zionist, or say that, you know, and he was more tied to 9/11 and what happened that day. And the plane couldn't even have hit the Pentagon if it were not for Dick Cheney and you know, all the war games and stand down order and everything else. There's just his hands are as dirty as anyone else. And the obvious motive there for him, I mean, he's military industrial complex all the way, tied to, you know, Raytheon, Bechtel, Halliburton, you name it. And, I mean, he's been an old buddy, of Bush's back in the White House since, the days of Henry Ford and everything.
Right.
And they were involved in a whole bunch of companies that, you know, Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and all these guys used to work together, you know, back in the day. They're old buddies. I mean,
cronies, yeah.
I have a feeling a plan like this might have been, you know, at least talked about or whispered about, you know, back in those days. They might have even been thinking about, you know, I mean, think about it. This plan is just, it's been used by dictators and fascists for, you know, throughout history. You pack your own building, blame it on someone else, and it's just works. It works every single time. It works the same in any country, according
it does.
To the Goring quote.
It's amazing their success rate with the false flags or with the, you know, the trying to get us into war. It works every time, and that's quite disturbing. But you know, let me ask you one more. I mean, since I got the expertise of the alien scientist or Jeremy Riss, let me ask you one more particular character that you kind of focus on in that the money investigation, and that is L. Paul Bremer. You kind of tie everything back into this L. Paul Bremer character. Can you just kind of, this will kind of just give you a background of what this film is like and how in depth this investigation is, but. But who is L. Paul Bremer, and how does he tie in to 9/11?
He's certainly an interesting character. He was brought to my attention by Kevin Ryan and his research. And it's just interesting that, you know, he was a CEO or the high-ranking officer, or even the CEO one of the executive officers of Marsh & McLennan. It was a major insurance brokerage company right in the impact zone of the North Tower. Where the first plane hit on 9/11, and he missed work the day of 9/11, and to go to actually go on MSNBC and basically say that Iraq and Iran could have been responsible, and that, you know, he was one of the first people to point the fingers at Osama bin Laden, like, early on, and knew the whole official story and was, you know, basically giving it, feeding it to the media from day one, which is just suspicious in itself. He went on to be the Iraq occupation governor, so... You know, it's like, here, you know, you help us out, you get hooked up with a nice, cozy job over in Iraq.
Wow.
And a lot of people blame him for, you know, creating the problem that we needed to stay. Iraq was originally, I mean, back in 2002-03 when we were first, you know, talking about going over there and everything. It was supposed to be this quick thing, you know, we weren't going to stay there, you know. But we, after we went in, it turned into a quagmire, and we needed to stay there. And a lot of people blamed L. Paul Bremer's leadership for turning Iraq into the quagmire. You know, and it's sort of interesting how all these strategic objectives toward, you know, setting up permanent military bases around the oil fields in Iraq, which are a strategic location. And it's less about, you know, a lot of people say, well, we're not securing that oil for us back here. I've heard that argument, and it's less about securing that oil for us back here as it is about preventing or basically securing the supply and production sites and the supply lines to, don't forget about East Asia, you know, right, Europe and Russia, because this is the second largest oil reserve in the world, and it's a strategic global objective. And it's written in their books. I mean, one of the guys that advocated a term similar to the catastrophic and catalyzing event was Zbigniew Brzezinski in his book The Grand Chessboard. And in that, they basically outlined why they needed to control oil and the oil reserves, and why the energy was so important to their globalist agenda. It's the oil is undoubtedly a motive. I mean, look at Dick Cheney's ties to the oil companies and everything, and his motivations for, you know, his involvement as well. It's definitely, I mean, we're talking about trillions of dollars, and those amounts of money make people do really crazy things.
Now, how do we benefit from that? So if we're there taking the oil, which is, you're right, it's clear that would obviously be their purpose for being there, but are we benefiting from it? Who actually benefits from it? Because here in California, the gas is, you know, $4.30 a gallon. I mean, and that's only going up. So when do we see a benefit, or is there ever a benefit, or is it just complete tyranny?
The benefit's never for us. The benefit is for the people at the top, the people who are controlling the spigot on that oil over there and in those countries. And it's like I said, it's a strategic objective militarily and economically for, you know, controlling those other nations of the world. If we're the ones in control of the oil, you know, it's like we got it. We basically got it before China or Russia or, you know, anyone else could. I think China would probably be our biggest opponent at this point in the game. But and I'm surprised that they're not more, you know, upset about, you know, or more vocal about our interference in the Middle East and everything that's going on over there.
Right. Now, we can change the topic from 9/11 since I got you, and I certainly don't want to run out of time. Let me ask you a question. Now, on your website, you reference Dr. Stephen Greer. Now, do you agree with Dr. Greer's work, where do you stand on Dr. Stephen Greer's work, the Disclosure Project, you know, the Sirius Project,
The
Energy Project.
Right. I think the Orion Project, from what I've seen so far, has been a complete failure. He has talked to a lot of people who I think have led him on a wrong direction. And, of course, he's a medical doctor. He's not a scientist. So I think that's part of his problem in trying to seek out these energies. And the energies are so it's such a tricky topic. And I believe it's one of the most well-covered up topics out there for the alternative energies that do work and could be replacements, and to look at the whole history of the oil companies and different conspiracies they've been involved with regarding energy, like General Motors streetcar conspiracy, where they basically bought out all the trolleys and shut them down and pumped the tracks up and dismantled all the trolleys so that people couldn't get around with public transportation any longer, and that they would increase the demand for gasoline cars so that people would drive more and buy more cars and buy more gas. And it's like a conspiracy between the oil companies and the car companies. And you look at some of these things that they've done throughout history. They've shut down, they bought out patents. They've shut people down. they look what happened with Cold Fusion. They went to the media, and the media just absolutely made fools out of them and blacklisted Cold Fusion from mainstream academic discussion everywhere. And it's interesting, these types of developments that you can see throughout the history. And there's countless people selling, you know, free energy devices and these types of things out there. And I think that, you know, most of the stuff that you see out there is fraudulent, and it takes a very trained investigator to be able to pick out what's real and what isn't. And it's not always that easy, you know.
It's very difficult.
The only way to tell is experiment. What are you going to build and try every single whack job machine someone says works? You know, like, you can't do that. It's not possible.
Right.
It wouldn't be possible. I mean, you could maybe get like an organization of people together who have done it collectively, and you know, make like a whole organization dedicated to, you know, building all these things. But where would it end? Because, you know, the hoaxers could just keep coming up with new ideas. So it's I think it's a complicated topic. But back to Disclosure Project, I think Disclosure Project was much more successful. It brought a large amount of public awareness to the fact that there are these witnesses out there who claim to have worked with material related to these, you know, so-called X-Files.
Right.
And that there are over 400 or 600 or some number of these individuals who are claim that they're, you know, ready and willing to testify under oath before Congress. And that's pretty powerful, you know, when you have that level of people. And I'm sure that if something like that actually got going, where they were able to get in front of Congress, you'd have more people crawling out of the woodwork.
Right.
All over the place.
Sure.
It's such a difficult thing to live with, that type of a secret. And I think that people are dying to, you know, get the truth out. But I don't think the climate and the atmosphere is really conducive to that sort of development at this point in the stage of the game, anyway. You know, it's really a difficult climate out there for people to come forward with information. People who do come forward with information, or people who have information, first off, are subject to all kinds of laws and that prevent them, and make them risk prosecution if they ever do come out with the information. And Bradley Manning and a lot of these other people that have leaked information, and I don't necessarily agree with all the methods and ways in which they did that, you know.
Right.
Bradley Manning was kind of reckless, and I think he leaked a lot of information that wasn't pertinent, you know, although he did release a lot of stuff that, you know, we should know. There's a lot of stuff that's like, whatever, it didn't really need to be out there. And then there's other people that have pointed out some of the things in his leak that it maybe not be genuine, that maybe may have been altered in one way or another to make certain objectives look better than others. And there might have been information that was taken out of that. And who knows? It's just, anytime you look at intelligence or information, you always have to have those ambiguities, and you have to look at, well, this could be real, or this could be disinformation. You have to always consider, until you can really solidify something down, you know,
When I look at Dr. Greer's work, and I hear the things, you know, he's very persuasive, I guess, in his delivery, but he always gets to the point to where he's going to disclose the information, and I guess that's the whole end of his project. But he gets to the programmed life forms and the psychotronic weapons, and it just kind of gets to a point to where, that level of it kind of, you know, for someone like me, who obviously there's other existence out there besides, our little tiny world. But all of the things he describes are quite, unusual. Where does your own alien investigation work, or, you know, ET work, where does your work find you in the belief of us either possibly being visited or for sharing technology or sharing their technology in the future? Where does your personal work lead your beliefs?
Well, I don't think that there is direct contact, so to speak. I think there may have been at some point some sort of preliminary contact, or that contact might be limited to just them analyzing us and taking a few specimens for, you know, abductions or whatever, to just do some medical tests or take some samples or drop us off. I don't know. I definitely think that extraterrestrial life does exist out there in the Fermi paradox. I talk about this on my website on the tab about aliens. I give basically my resolution to the Fermi paradox is, like, they're out there, but if you think about it, why would they have any reason to communicate with us? Like, it might be, they might be so advanced that they could see the errors of doing such a thing, and knowing that if they were ever show ourselves to us, it would just or share technology. It's like, it's kind of like a cheat sheet. I think, I don't think they would, you know, a responsible alien race would let someone else like us copy off their homework, you know, that they've already, we need to do it ourselves. And I think that these beliefs are actually, I believe those beliefs are dangerous, to believe that we're going to, you know, that aliens are going to save us. It's kind of, I kind of compare it to a lot of religious people that have the same idea that Jesus is going to return and make everything okay. Right. And I think that's a dangerous idea, because it takes a lot of the responsibility off of us. I mean, we need to fix this world. We need to stand up. We need to, you know, work together collectively to come up with solutions. And I think that that's a shortcut to saying that, you know, like, oh, aliens or God or Jesus or whoever is going to come save us. It's a cop-out.
Right. Yeah,
in my opinion.
You're absolutely right. All right. Well, one more little question about the aliens. I'm very curious about these sorts of things. Obviously, we're all natural skeptics, and you know, we wonder if you know what all these people tell us is actually real. But let me ask you if this is a valid question: if we shared our Saturn rocket technology or our early rocket technology with aliens, or it's claimed that this Wernher von Braun or whatever his name is shared some sort of technology with it. Now, why did we build such a primitive rocket? Is that not a point, or would they only share a piece of the information, or how do you feel about that? So if we're sharing rocket information, should our rocket not have gone much farther than it actually did and look a lot different? I don't know. That's the part that confuses me. How do you feel about that?
It does. It's very confusing. That's a very confusing. I've never heard that actually before. I don't think that aliens would use rockets.
Right.
I don't think that's. I mean, where's the evidence that they shared anything? I don't see it. I mean, a lot of people have claimed Corso's book. You know, the day after Roswell claims that transistors came from reverse engineered alien technology that was recovered from the Roswell crash. Although the transistor was reported, it was built actually like reported only 4 months after Roswell. Like December after, you know, July was Roswell, and then it was that December in 1947 that the transistor. But they had been doing the theoretical work on PNP solid state physics for the past 2 years before that. So they were developing all the theoretical work necessary to understand and create the transistor way before Roswell ever happened. And there's too short of a time period between when Roswell happened and when the transistor came out. So a lot of these things, I don't think the extraterrestrial explanation holds up to the evidence.
Right.
And,
right. No.
And I don't think that, nor do I think that aliens would share technology with us, because, like, right. I said, it's like a cheat sheet. It would be irresponsible for them to let us copy their homework.
You're right. I agree. That's a good point. Hey, you know what? Let me ask you another question. Let's kind of move on. Now, you mentioned the Black Ops program on your website and the farm and things of the Black Ops. I know everything we're talking about pretty much is Black Ops, but tell me a little about that. I mean, does that really exist? I mean, obviously it really exists, but how does it exist? I mean, is the farm still there? Are there multiple farms? Are they all over the world? I can only imagine. How do you get into these groups?
Well, I mean, the CIA recruits out of universities. What they'll do is they'll hold a lunch or something, say that there's going to be free food and drinks there, but then there actually aren't, and just to get people to show up. And then they'll just, you know, poke around and see what kind of people show up, and you know, see what kind of people are there and kind of skills are around. But also, people who are hackers or have other skills, and you know, them off the internet. One of the things they might do is find someone who's you know, and patrol, or there's all kinds of.
You're kind of breaking up there, so if we lose you, I apologize for that. But it is very interesting, you know, understanding that there is this whole organization of or military-like organization that, you know, operates behind the scenes or behind the budgets, you know, and in the black or in the blank, so to speak, right?
Black ops.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and they have their hands in it. You're kind of coming in and out.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
No worries.
So, anyways, let me define black ops a little bit better.
Sure.
Black operation is what is meant by black is that it is deniable. That means that it's not considered black operation unless, and they won't conduct an operation unless they have deniability. They need that layer of plausible deniability in order to operate.
Right.
Where they could be like, well, we don't know. The agency is not directly connected to this, and there might be some way to carry out the operation so that it would be deniable. For example, drug trafficking, what they'll do is hire someone who's unconnected to the agency to be doing trafficking for them so that if they ever get caught, as if someone is part of the military or one of these other organizations, be like, oh, well, that was a rogue element that wasn't really connected with, it wasn't, you know, wasn't being officially sponsored or condoned, and just these layers of deniability. And
we have a really bad connection there, Jeremy. But I hear everything you're saying, and so plausible deniability is everything. So they can hire these outside groups to then do their covert activity, and then they can kind of throw their hands up and say, you know, it wasn't us. Now, do you feel that they would actually tell these organizations to, if you can still hear me, do you think they actually tell these organizations like they do in the films that if you're caught, you don't know us, and, you know, don't mention we had anything to do with it?
It's different. I mean, I think it's specific to the operation, and
right.
In there, every single operation, you're going to have certain bits of intelligence which do get compromised. Anytime you have an operative, he's going to know certain things,
right.
And they're definitely careful about what they tell these people and how they, you know, control an agent or, you know, an operative. But it's different. I'd say, and it's specific to the case, because sometimes. In the case of the Watergate burglars, they had E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, who were, you know, longtime veterans who had, you know, all sorts of compromising connections to intelligence. And, you know, and others were, you know, there might be a guy that's just, you know, has no real, you know, case and connection at all. He's just a lone wolf or something, you know?
Right. Very interesting. And does Camp Perry still exist? Is that still there, or is that gone? Is that part of history? That's old, right?
I'm not sure. It's been one of these facilities for so long. It's been public knowledge at least since, you know, the 1970s when Philip Agee published his first book on the CIA diary that really talked about Camp Perry and named it as the place, and he even named his trainers and staff, the people that, you know, trained him there and everything. And so I'm sure they've maybe moved a lot of things around and maybe do things off site. And then it's certainly not the only intelligence agency in the world or the only training center for intelligence agents.
Now, how did we come to know about Camp Perry? Was that a whistleblower? Or how did we find out that was the CIA, or did we not really ever find out?
The original source for that, I believe, came from Philip Agee, his book CIA Diary.
Interesting. All right. Well, very neat. Through all your work and all the things that you... put together. Let me ask you a question. All the groups out there, the show that I was starting today was an attempt at a message of unification to the 9/11 truth movement, and to come together, because you know how much dissension there is out there amongst all of these organizations. Would you find yourself joining an organization? I know you've been pretty much alone or singular in your website and in your identity, but will you actually join any of these 9/11 truth movement groups and team up your information with theirs and then make it even stronger?
If it could make it stronger, then I might be able to team up with certain people. But I definitely believe there are groups out there that are designed to make the movement weaker and are actively trying to infiltrate, you know, with this sort of message of a unification where, you know, we accept all these different ideas and stuff. And I don't think that's a good idea. I think a lot of the people who are out there and are involved with this movement do not have the best intentions at heart. And I definitely believe there are many people out there trying to harm this movement, take it down, discredit it, pull it apart from the inside. And of course, you know, this is what COINTELPRO does. They target groups like this because 9/11 Truth has a huge potential to put all these. They took a huge risk with 9/11, and they will all be indicted eventually.
You truly believe that?
Later, it's going to happen. I mean,
writing's
on the wall. It's just that there's so much intelligence operations going on to cover it up. And like I explained, mainstream media has been pretty much the leading role in this, and that's why I took so much work in debunking National Geographic and BBC and all those other documentaries that they've released, you know, trying to trash the 9/11 Truth Movement and just basically removing the scientific basis for all of their arguments, so that anyone with an education who looks into it will see that they're full of crap. And I think, I just don't see unification within the movement being possible. I think that there are subversive groups promoting that idea for deceptive agendas to basically hijack the movement. And I wouldn't trust any under any one title or anything like that. I think it's a conglomerate.
Right. So you
need to push it forward.
Right. So if you feel that if there was a purpose or intention towards unification, you feel that there would certainly be some sort of COINTELPRO, to be joined in and obviously try to destroy it from within. And that certainly makes sense.
Right. It's like the Warren Commission or the King Commission investigation. They're just going to be like, well, we're going to have an official inquiry and this is going to be it. And anytime something like that comes up, just get ready for it.
Right. We have to be careful of all of that. Jeremy, I appreciate you joining me today on the show. Tell everybody where they can actually find your information and your investigatory work, and tell everybody where they can find you.
Two best sources are alienscientist.com, and if you search Facebook, alienscientist.com, I've been posting a lot of stuff there on the social networking site. So those are the two best places until I go to my YouTube channel. It's down right now for fighting a copyright violation. These trolls shut them down. So it's temporarily offline, but I'm hoping to get it back.
Okay, and you'll eventually have all of that back up, because I was trying to find a lot of that in preparation for the show, and a lot of it is gone. It has been mirrored for other users out there, so a lot of it has splintered out and ended up there. But let me ask you a question. When they take your site down, do all the videos disappear? I mean, do they have possession of the videos?
Yeah.
But you still have those, correct?
I still have backup copies of all my videos. Got it. In fact, I haven't posted on those teams.
Okay. All right, it was a shock seeing that down, and I was one of the people who was definitely on your side on that one. I'm certainly in your corner, and hopefully you can get that back up and get that all worked out soon, so we can get back to looking at your important work, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling in today, man. I appreciate it. Jeremy Riss, Mr. Alien Scientist, thank you very much for calling in, man. I appreciate it.
Ain't no problem.
You have a good day. All right, so that was very interesting. Mr. Jeremy Riss, Alien Scientist. So, you know, that all ties into, thank you for calling in, Jeremy. I really do appreciate that. I certainly didn't want to run over or run out of time, towards the end of this broadcast, so I can kind of finish it up and explain how it started. So in creating a unified truth movement. Now, Jeremy has a good point. And his point is that if all of these groups came together into one collective Congress, which I do think is possible, what he's saying is that there would certainly be some sort of influence or influential group that would be then either paid off or influenced to actually come in and destroy or take down, you know, the Unification Congress or the New Truth Congress. So he makes an excellent point, and I do agree with that point. But I feel that we have to really bring this knowledge together. Think about it like this. The New World Order works in a collective. The building towards the New World Order, it works in a collective mindset. So when we all look at all of this information separately, when these groups all do their work independently and then kind of present it to the other groups, and then the other groups either kind of accept it or they don't accept it, it kind of brings us to a point of, you know, our work versus their work. No, my work is better than their work. So it brings in the competitiveness of, you know, humanity. And we all want our work to be the most accurate, you know, the most damning, should we say, the most case worthy, right? And I feel that competition has kind of stopped a collectivist kind of, melding together of these truth groups, you know, and I feel that individually they can only go so far. And I think they've gone as, I don't want to say they've gone as far as they possibly can, or I certainly wouldn't be here doing the show, but these groups are, they're so powerful in their information and they're so accurate and it is so good. And I won't leave you in mystery. The groups like Pilots for 9/11 Truth, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, scholars for 9/11 Truth, and there are an abundance of these organizations that actually have caught the government red-handed. Oh, of course, Citizen Investigation Team, CIT, Craig Reinke and Aldo Marquis. And now, you know, it just makes sense that if the New World Order moves towards their tyranny in this collectivist mindset, that we should all, you know, use that, you know, come together, all the groups share the information, whatever isn't valid or whatever isn't substantial, you know, we put that at the bottom of the list and we move all the, the evidence worthy, the case worthy stuff to the top. And we work on it in a logical progression, right? So I don't see why a pseudo, I guess you'd say that, Truth Congress, a new American Truth Congress would be like a pseudo legislative organization, much like a CFR or whatever it is, you know, not a lobbying group, but we would be a policy making group. And if you took all of the heads or the dynamic people in these organizations and put them into this, this new Truth Congress, you know, even if it wasn't the official Congress, you know, you're going to start to have the political influence that these other groups have, you know, all these PNACs and the, you know, the things we talk about, you know, and Jeremy's right, you know, that the more we allow them to collectivize, you know, the more that it is going to be worse for us. But he's also right when he says that that it will come to it. There will be a day where the people are held accountable for 9/11. The day has to come because the information is too severe. There's too much of it. And of course, I always just hit the tip of the iceberg every time. But if you look deeply into this information, you will be amazed at what you find. And he has done an amazing job. Jeremy Riss, alien scientist, at uncovering a lot of the, the more questionable or the more detailed items in the 9/11 investigations. And it's great work. So check him out. Go to YouTube. Now, he did mention that his YouTube page had been pulled for copyright problems. So he'll get that all worked out. But if you still go to YouTube and you type in alien scientist, you'll still get his video splintered in there. Other people have mirrored them and use them. So check his information out. It is great. I do appreciate him for calling. Let's see. That pretty much does it. I'll go through the list of all the folks, the 10 folks that I had to set up for the American, you know, New American Congress, Truth Congress. I will go through those names on another show. Certainly, that list is endless. Obviously, we would only have 10, no particular order, but we will certainly do that on another show now. I want to squeeze this song in one. I just want to squeeze this song in because I didn't get a chance to play it. So let's move this in. We were talking about future aliens, future worlds. Are we going to be assisted by aliens? Well, let's listen to Ziggy Marley. Here we go.
Tomorrow, people, how long will you last? Come on.
Thanks, Ziggy. Sorry about that. I was a little bit verklempt, is that what I say? But thank you for joining me here today. Thank you, Jeremy Riss, alien scientist, for calling in. I do appreciate that. Your work is stellar. It needs to be studied. Check him out. Check us out on Facebook. Any questions, comments, corrections you want to make, please shoot them onto the Facebook page. And I will, of course, post all of the links to his work there as well. So please join me again next week. Go download all the shows that you've missed. Download this one, you know, when you get a chance. It was much needed information. Okay, so thank you. This is Wyme Russell for the Devils in the Details radio show. And once again, next Friday, we are having another nice little show for you. So sorry this one started so rough, but it ended on a better note. Sorry for the bad cell communication. That is just part of the New World Order that we all deal with. So I will see you next week on the Devils in the Details show. See you next week. I'm walking with the devil.